This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
This is On Driven on Joy 94.9, the multicultural show with myself, Hugh, today. On Driven represents peace and understanding in our multicultural GLBTIQ community. If you have any comments on the program or would like to ask any questions, you can contact us by the following ways. 0427-JOY-949 if you can SMS. On air at joy.org.au for your emails. And we are also on Facebook, On Driven on Joy 949. On today's show, we're talking to Anthony and Pierre, who both come from Singapore. Today, we'll be talking about communication, discrimination, and learning to live and work in Australia as a, for if you're a migrant or overseas student. Stay tuned to On Driven on Joy 94.9 to hear what both my guests have to say on all of these subjects. My two guests today are Anthony and Pierre. Now, Anthony and Pierre are both from Singapore. One is Chinese Singaporean and one is Indian Singaporean. And today we're going to be talking about communication, discrimination, and how to settle in Australia and get a job, basically. But to start the conversation off, I'll start with Anthony. Anthony, tell us a little bit about you and your background.
Hello, Hugh. Happy to be here again today. I won't go all the way back, that might be too far, but back in Singapore, I worked previously in an international public relations company, and I handle a luxury account. One was a global account, and the other was a regional account across 7 countries. Then from there, I was headhunted to join a financial planning company.
Can I just ask, which countries did you actually work in?
Back in Singapore, handling those accounts, I went to London quite a lot, down to Australia as well, and China, and sometimes India as well.
Okay, so you did a lot of moving around.
I did a lot of moving around. It was interesting for me, looking at how people communicated differently. I was handling the media account, and as a result of which, I would interact with the media in those countries. And every single country had their own culture when it came to media and a way that it had to be practiced. It was different in Japan to the way it was in Singapore or in China. It was, again, understanding and wrapping your head around how the media worked and how you would communicate.
How did you actually prepare yourself for each country?
It comes with making that effort to learn. I did not walk in and make the assumption that because I did media in Singapore, that was how it's going to be. I did talk to the account manager there and the specialist there, and I said, these are the media that we want to go. This is the strategy that we want to hit. What would be the best way to do this? And they would say, here, how we would do it would be on a one-on-one basis. We would not do a press conference because that would not work. But if you did it one-on-one, then you show that media person that this is a really big story that you're giving them, and they appreciated that and would give you quite a lot of space in that arena as well. So to me, again, I would say understand what you're going to do and how you're going to go ahead doing that, and be mindful of which space you are in and whose space you are in. It is not my space.
Okay. Let's turn to Pierre. Pierre, let's give us a little bit of your background.
Hello, Hugh. Hello, Anthony. And again, it's very nice to be back the second time
around. Nice to have you back, Pierre.
Thank you. So I'm actually the Chinese Singaporean that Hugh was talking about.
That would make me the Indian one then.
Yes, that's right. So in coming to Australia, I made a roundabout kind of route. I was educated and raised in Singapore, and when I first graduated from uni, started working all around Asia and the US.
Okay.
I got headhunted as well by a company in New Zealand, of all places. So I moved there, lived there for 3 years, but in the interim also worked a lot in Australia. So officially moved to Australia in 2002. So just overall, I have about 15 years worth of business consulting IT experience.
Okay.
Yeah. And just in the last couple of years, I also ventured out into small business. I own a couple of Mövenpick ice cream cafes.
Okay. So if I can ask, why did you move into the ice cream business if you are doing IT?
It was interesting. On the side, I've, like some people I know, I've always relished the idea of owning my own cafe. I worked very hard in the business consulting field, and with my last job as the sales manager for healthcare division in Siemens, the German company, I was so overworked. And when I finally resigned and returned to Australia from Singapore, it was the height of the global financial crisis.
Right.
So I thought, you know, instead of just jumping straight into another full-time job, why not take a little break and kind of open my mind up to other opportunities? And when this opportunity came along, it's a franchise, by the way, I thought, well, why not piggyback on somebody else's experience? Yes, I do pay a bit of money at the front for people to help me set up the cafe. But at least as someone who's completely new to hospitality, I didn't have to start from scratch.
So you're actually an employer and an employee?
Yes, at the same time.
At the same time.
Yeah.
How do you juggle working for a company and running a business?
I didn't always do that at the same time. So when I opened my first cafe, that's in Brisbane, I spent about the first 6 months running it full time, building up the team and making sure all the processes were right. And then handed over to a couple of so-called shift supervisors. I mean, it's a small cafe, so I don't want to make it bigger than what it sounds. So after 6 months, you know, the team was pretty au fait with everything, especially with customer service. That's the key.
Yeah.
And I was comfortable enough to hand over and return to business consulting.
Okay. Yeah. We'll come back to Pierre and Anthony very soon, just after this. On Driven on Joy 94.9. And of course, you've just been listening to the wonderful Elkie Brooks. I think she's a wonderful singer, nice and white satin. And our first song today was from Alison Moyet. And that track was All Cried Out. So we're doing a 70s, 80s sort of music today. How did you like it, guys?
Very nice.
Yeah. I liked it.
I love the screaming.
I take it it's not your type of music, yeah.
No. On a very late night when I'm feeling a bit torn or...
Okay, now we've got Pierre and Anthony, both from Singapore. One, Anthony's Indian Singaporean and Pierre is Chinese Singaporean. And we're talking about communication and discrimination and different other things. And let's move on to discrimination. Now, Pierre, let's start with you. Tell us what your feelings on discrimination.
I guess I would probably divide my experiences into two, one being in the workplace and one being sort of as a just an individual, you know, living out there in the community. I'd have to say, fortunately for me, at the workplace, I haven't particularly felt discriminated ever in my, you know, 15, 16 years worth of work experience. But then again, I have not elected to come out at every single job that I've worked in, but more on that later. What I would want to say, though, is when I first moved to Queensland years ago, I did encounter, you know, people whistling at me on the street, calling me sort of either racist names or something to do with my sexuality, because when I met my partner in Brisbane, we, you know, often would go out for dinner like any couple would. And yes, I've had some taunts and all that, and I've had someone drive past and spat at me.
Really?
Yeah, but, you know, look, I think in the grand scheme of things, you know, in my 38 years worth of life at the moment, it's a trickle in the ocean. I think in life, you walk out on the street, you put yourself out there, and sometimes you just have to be careful that some people are not as civilized as one might expect. So
now you've lived in Brisbane and Melbourne.
That's right.
Is there a difference with the way people react here to Brisbane?
I mean, one might apply the stereotype that perhaps Melbourne is more cultured and more tolerant. I think for a city that is more multiracial, it definitely helps when you hop onto the train or the tram in Melbourne. You know, you don't have just the one race with a small group of minorities. Yeah. So I think the more people are aware and comfortable in that multicultural surrounding, it actually does help. Mm. I think everyone has their own private prejudices. But Brisbane, I would say, is a lot more Anglo. You know, I feel that we stand out just a little bit more in Brisbane.
Right.
And that could explain some of the situations I've been in.
Okay. Yep, I understand what you're saying. Mm. Anthony, what about you?
I haven't experienced very many acts of discrimination. There have been a couple in the last 20-odd years. And as Pierre said, those are things that you take in your stride when you are a minority or of a different race or culture. Some people will react in different ways. The only thing that I think that pumps up quite a lot for me is the fact that my name is Anthony Rosario, and I have an accent. Some people think it's American. So sometimes when I do the first job interview over phone and I go in for the next interview, there to meet me acts genuinely surprised that they're not meeting a white person. And this Indian guy, tall, gorgeous, and handsome, walks in, and they go like,
What did they think about you when you walk in?
Funny. And they go, oh. And you know, when someone says, oh, and you think, oh my God, that's my chance of going. Am I going to get the job now? You know, so that's the only time that stereotypes do come into play. And I guess that's the only occasion I've had.
Okay. You know? So what you're actually saying is it's like Chinese people maybe using a Western name on the resume, but then when they turn up, they're Chinese. But in your case, they say, "Oh, it's an Indian."
Yes, and you know, in Australia, you don't need to list your background. Mm. You know, it's your name and your experiences, and that's what you walk in and present. But you can't get away from the fact that you see in someone's eyes this look of saying, "You're not what I expected." Yeah. And you think, is that going
to
hurt
my chance?
Do
you think that holds you back, though, from finding employment?
It depends on who I'm meeting with. With most companies, larger companies, and most, they're far more forward-thinking, and they are looking at your resume, and they're looking at your skill set. And the conversation is always about what I've done in difficult situations, what have I done at this, and when this happened at the workplace. And I'm very comfortable explaining all of those and getting across that. And they seem genuinely interested in me from there. But back in Singapore and working in Singapore, working a bit in Hong Kong and sometimes in Taiwan, I found that they were looking at my race quite a lot more than they were looking at my experience. And I got the impression that they would have been far more comfortable employing someone of a similar race as opposed to having this person in the company.
Right. Now, we did have a lot of trouble in Melbourne with Indians being attacked. And I think the media sort of blew it up into something bigger than it really was. And I know when I was in India this year, a lot of people there were asking me about, well, is it safe for Indians? You know, all these Indians are being attacked and everything else. How have you found it?
Personally, I thought it was a great opportunity for me. You can always look for the silver lining in things. Mm. To show their diversity, more companies were hiring Indians. Right. And they wanted to say that we embrace all cultures and all diversities and are an equal opportunity employer. So I never felt that was an issue. And I just thought at times that the media was going for sensationalism. Mm. And it does sell magazines.
What about you, Pierre, as an employer? I'm sure there's a lot of employers discriminate against what the race they're employing.
Yes.
So you've got the different nationalities in the restaurants, Vietnamese, Chinese, Indian. And also, they sometimes pay a lot lower wages as well.
Yes, I've certainly heard that, and obviously certain free-to-air TV channels love amplifying some of those cases of, people being paid less because of their race. I personally am not sure how pervasive that situation is. But what I think people don't realize sometimes is if you did not get a job offer, what you are potentially being so-called discriminated against is not your race, but perhaps you didn't have the right experience or the way you carried yourself amplified your difference.
Okay.
For example, talking about accents, Anthony, you know, mentioned that briefly. If I have someone coming in for a job and they are, you know, let's say fresh from mainland China and just moved to Australia, I am obviously aware of that, but not so much in terms of their race or their background, but as an employer, how I feel they might be able to interact with customers from all backgrounds all shapes and sizes. Can the customers understand their accent? Can they understand their customers' accent? So I wouldn't call it discrimination, but I think people need to be aware that, yes, we have our differences.
And, okay. Yeah. Okay, we'll come back to Pierre and Anthony very soon. We just got some sponsors to listen to. To Speak is a Sin, and of course the Pet Shop Boys, one of my favorite bands. What did you think of that, Pierre? Because you're giving me a funny look there.
No. There was no funny look. I was saying to you during the song, what an English thing to say. To Speak is a Sin, yes.
This is On Driven on Joy 94.9, and I'm speaking to Pierre and Anthony, who both come from Singapore, and we're discussing quite a few different things, communication, discrimination, and we're going to talk about finding employment, and mostly for migrants and overseas students. Now, if you have a point that you would like to put across to us, or let us know what you think about what Anthony and Pierre are saying, you can email onair@joy.org.au. Or SMS 0427JOY949. We would love to hear from you, and I'm sure Pierre and Anthony would love to hear from you, even if it's just to say that they're talking a lot of whatever. But but of course they're not. So let's move on to finding an employment. Now, Pierre, you're an employer. What
yes,
advice
that's right.
would you give to migrants and overseas students coming into Australia and obviously looking for some work to keep them going in the for the overseas students?
Yes, for
and
sure.
migrants trying to find full-time employment. From your experience as an employer, tell us some of the things that they should do.
Yes, and again, my background, you know, in running a small cafe, I do come across a lot of overseas students looking for work, especially students from Asia. In terms of employment, I think most employers look for the same things, you know, prior experience, in my case, in hospitality. I hate to say this, but language is a key, and that's where I think a lot of overseas students struggle with. Not just the command of English, but your accent, your ability to speak clearly. And sometimes they come in and they're, you know, heads down, mumbling their name to me and wanting a job, they can't even get a foot in the door, because if I can't understand them, neither can my customers. That's key. And of course, a good positive attitude, a sense of confidence about the person. So it's never the one thing, is it? You know, when you hire someone, it's a combination of everything and all the stuff that I just talked about. I think they're of equal importance to me.
Let me ask you one question. You're Singaporean Chinese.
Right.
When you are employing people for your ice cream cafe,
yes.
do you employ Chinese or any nationality?
I employ any nationality. Across the two cafes I've got now, I can safely say I've got people from China, Taiwan, Italian Australians, locals, you know, normal white Aussie Australians. I've hired in the past French-speaking Canadians, Germans.
So you've got a wide range. You don't
yes.
just stick to Asian people.
And I must say, I deliberately try and have a wider range, because the cafe that I run is an international brand, and I want to make sure that we portray a certain level of diversity. That, you know, I don't want people to come in and go, oh, is this an Asian ice cream shop? That doesn't help with the brand at all.
No.
But again, yeah, I'm not discriminatory. And I think once you've got your foot in the door, you've got your job, it's really up to you to perform. And you mustn't forget that performance counts at the end of the day. And I think some of the staff that I've had to let go in the past, they forget that. You know, and then they think, oh, you're letting me go because I'm just an overseas student. No, that's not the case. You forgot that actually your performance is not on par with the rest of the team.
Right.
You know, and it's a hard medicine to swallow, but it does boil down to that at the end of it.
How does your business run, though, just employing students mostly? Because they won't last for very long, will they?
Surprisingly, my store in Brisbane, my core team of staff now, they're all overseas students. They've been with me for 2 years, which is fairly long in hospitality. If you hire someone who's in the first or second year of uni, you could have them for 2 years at least, which is quite a while, provided that you treat them well and you motivate them. I have had people come and go, but I think the key for any small business owner is to find a balance. You know, you have your core team. You obviously want to find out their background and their motivation, how long they plan to stay in Australia, what their plans are. So from there, you can kind of gauge. Obviously, there's no guarantees in life. Everyone tells you they'll be with you forever, but who knows?
What about you, Anthony? What's your feelings on this subject?
I understand what Pierre is talking about, and to those students and migrants who are going to go and apply for a job, my advice, coming from a field of communication, is know about your prospective employer before you get there. And it's not just looking at the internet. It's actually going around that area, sitting in a cafe, maybe at like in Pierre's cafe, looking at the people coming and going and the kind of service they're offering. Understand all of that before you get there. Look at your tone. You might want to see if your tone is being aggressive or it's kind of direct, because employees may not like that. And in the service industry, that may not work well. And if you're not confident in English as your first language, then look at the choice of words that you use. Simpler, shorter words, shorter sentences, learning to communicate and reaffirm what you're saying to someone. If you're not sure what they're saying, repeat it, reaffirm the words being said. And those kind of little tips can help in terms of getting a job. Be confident and show that you are confident. It's body language, it's how you dress, it's how you present yourself, and how you address the issues as well. And sometimes your earnestness might help you get the job, even though you might have other limitations, because the employer feels that he's taking on board someone who's going to learn and develop and grow as well.
It's a difficult one, because even if you speak English and have a strong accent, like myself, when I first came here, I mean, I remember one employer saying, oh, I don't think you understand the money here. Now, it's a really stupid thing to say to someone, but it's his way of saying, oh, I don't like your accent, or your accent's too strong, and people are not going to understand you. And you actually brought this up, Pierre.
Yes.
You know, what would your advice to someone who's got a strong accent and maybe it's difficult for people to understand?
I think for overseas students, if they want to land a job straight off when they land in Australia, I think they need to be realistic. You know, life is a learning experience. I think in parallel, they need to keep improving their English, find local students in their class that can help them with accents and all that. There is no shortcut. You need to keep improving, just in case a good opportunity is just around the corner and you're there to, you know, snap it up. But also, what I want to mention is dealing with setbacks. You are going to get rejections. You know, I reject resumes every day. And I think it's how you deal with setbacks and how you keep picking yourself up and maintain that positive view on life and confidence that's going to ultimately help you. Perseverance does help.
Okay. Okay, we'll come back to Anthony and Pierre very soon.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Rod Seeger and the Silver Bullet Band, Still the Same, another classic. I did say it was going to be 70s and 80s music today, didn't I? Yes, I did.
Yes, I was born a little after that.
It's basically all the music I like. Yeah, given my age away, mine too, as well. On Driven on Joy 94.9, this is Hugh, and my two guests are Pierre and Anthony, both from Singapore. And we're discussing everything about communication, and we're moving on to cross-cultural communication. Now, Anthony, you're a bit of an expert on this, I would say, in your own way.
In my own way, yes, indeed.
Let's start the conversation off. Tell us a little bit about cross-cultural.
When you ask me that kind of question, one of the few things I would say is make an effort to learn and understand about the culture that you are going to be involved in or you are going to be immersed in. Have empathy, because otherwise you're coming from a place of nothing or no knowledge, and everything that you're doing is on assumptions. And that's when people's feelings get hurt. That's when incidents happen and issues are raised. Always respect the other person. By giving respect, you're going to get respect back as well, and then you can have that communication that can go two ways. You should also look at little things like humor. It might be funny to you, but it may not be funny to the other person. Watch body language, because in another culture, touching people is considered rude, especially if you just met them. And all these are the tiny little things, nuances that come out of communication. I remember going from Singapore to London to present PR plans and walking into an office full of English staff to whom I was going to present these PR plans, and sometimes I would get this look in their faces like they could not believe that this person from Asia was telling them how to do their media, and they would ask questions, are you sure that's how it's done? Are you sure that's going to work? Have you done that before? And putting that sense of disbelief in what you believe in and trying to attack your own confidence,
Do you think they were asking these questions because of your race?
I think they had an assumption as to who I would be in their minds. And when I wasn't that person, yes, I think that was where the breakdown came in. But for me, I know what I'm doing. I'm confident in what I did. And I knew that at the end of this, I wanted to make sure they did the plan as required, because I'm responsible for the results, good or bad. I'm the one who has to be answerable. So
one question on along that line, people look at you and I'm looking at an Indian chap sitting
tall,
across
dark
from
and
me.
Handsome, yes.
does it help if you explain to them that you come from Singapore?
I don't think so. I don't think it's necessary. It depends on the situation and what you're being asked. And if it's about communication and the fact that my experience is there, I don't think at all that coming from Singapore is an excuse or is going to help me do my job better. What it should be is, what have you done and who have you worked for and how have you achieved success? And I think those were the kind of questions I had at my job interviews. And it never was about, you know, how long have you been working in London? How long have you been working in Singapore? And, you know, you worked in Taiwan where English is not considered a first language. Is that a disadvantage to you? You know?
What about you, Pierre? What have you got to tell us about cross-cultural communication?
Well, just my personal experience, I've worked in, obviously, in America and Europe as a consultant. I've also worked in South Korea and Saudi Arabia, you know, many countries where English is not the first language. I do agree with quite a few things that Anthony has said. There are subtle nuances, and I guess you should always not just talk, always listen and always keep your eyes open in terms of your surrounding. How are people behaving? How are men relating with women in some of these cultures is quite different. How are people relating to their subordinates? How are people relating to their managers? One observation I would like to make is, coming from Asia, for example, especially in, say, South Korea or even in Singapore to a certain extent, opposing or saying something that is the opposite of what your manager might be saying is considered quite shocking. It's insubordination.
Well, it's a bit stupid as well.
Exactly. But I've actually found that in Australia, people do appreciate if let's say I have a subordinate or I have a team, I do appreciate as the employer if they do come to me and in a very confident and a very civilized way explain to me certain major concerns they have or something that they fundamentally disagree with my methods or my approach. I think here, especially as an Asian student or an Asian professional that's moved to Australia for the first time to work, you have to be aware that sometimes you are expected to be counted. You know, you are expected to put your best foot forward and let your opinion be known. And if you don't, and as it turns out that you simply not follow protocol because you disagreed, but you never communicated that clearly, it's shown as a sign of weakness almost.
Okay.
So that's something to be aware of.
I agree with what Pierre is saying. There are times when you need to be constructive in the way you present your viewpoint because you come from a different background, but also look at how you're expressing it in the language that you use, in the body language that you use, and in the tone that you use so that it comes across as feedback that someone would want to take on board.
Sometimes that would be a little bit difficult, don't you think, for, say, someone who comes from mainland China?
Oh, absolutely.
And just speaks English, you know, they speak English with their accent. I mean, how do they get across in a way that's acceptable?
Absolutely. And I think there's no easy way about it. It's not just the language, it's the confidence. Often I find that people from Asia tend to keep to themselves. And if they disagree with their bosses, they simply think, oh, well, I only work here. I'll just keep doing it.
Yeah.
But it might come back and bite them later on when they fail to perform or are seen to be not actively contributing to improving, you know, their work environment.
Okay, we'll come back to Anthony and Pierre just after these commercials. Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9 with Hugh, and my two guests are Pierre and Anthony, both from Singapore. And we've been talking about communication and discrimination and cross-cultural communication. And unfortunately, we're coming to the end of the show. So just a little bit of advice, Pierre, for people who maybe want to come and work in your shop. Without actually saying it's your shop, but, you know.
Yes. I think just to recap, definitely, like Anthony said, do your homework. You know, so many people submit their resumes and they haven't even heard of the brand of my shop, have no idea what it's about, have no idea what sort of customers we're targeting. So definitely do your homework. And when you do show up, be confident, be sensitive to the timing. You know, never try and push your way into a small business when they're obviously busy, you know, trying to serve customers. So it's about being sensitive. You know, there's a bit of cross-cultural awareness as well. Be aware of your audience, you know, your employer. What are they about? What's their background? Don't get too hung up on your background and what you're trying to achieve.
Okay.
It's got to be about them as well.
What about something that, a question I thought about, and I've sort of held it off to the end, and it's basically for you. If there's a migrant, a Chinese migrant in this country, and he came into your shop and he's maybe the same age as me, would you consider him?
It would be...
Not that I'm saying I'm old, but...
I think it really depends. The age obviously is a barrier in hospitality. One consideration I have would be that, you know, would you be overqualified? Because, you know, look, language and culture aside, obviously someone who's older has a lot of life experiences.
Yeah.
Are you going to stay very long in a small business like mine? So that's something that you have to communicate with me and work out and be able to convince me on that front.
Okay. How about you, Anthony? Just wind it up. We're almost there at the end of the show, so very quickly wind it up.
I think the best advice I can give from my own perspective is I came here to live. And that's the attitude that I've taken on with everything that I've done. And that's the mindset I would suggest to anyone out there who's looking at how then to fit in. You came to live, embrace it all.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, we have come to the end of the show. Thanks for Anthony and Pierre for a great discussion. I hope you, the listener, enjoyed it. And if you're an overseas student, a migrant, you maybe learned something and to help you here. Coming up next on Joy is Shannon Power with Sha Power. So stay tuned for a great show on Joy 94.9. First, we've got the news with Byron. Thanks for joining us on Orange Ribbon today. Orange Ribbon will be back again at 4 o'clock next Saturday afternoon with more insights into our GLBTIQ community here in Australia and, of course, around the world. Have a great week. From myself, Hugh, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.